If you have a child with type 1 diabetes, whether they were diagnosed 5 days ago or 5 years ago, you continue to have questions. These are the questions about the emotional side of living with diabetes, the questions about how to parent diabetes. I'm Joanne Robb, a psychotherapist and fellow T1D mom, and I've been parenting diabetes for almost 15 years. In this podcast, I'm here to answer your questions about the emotional and relational challenges that come with being a caregiver for a child with type 1 diabetes. Before we dive in, I have to remind you that I'm not a doctor and nothing that I offer here should be considered medical advice. If you want to make any changes to the way you or your child is managing their type 1, please be sure to check in with your doctor or medical team. Let's get started. Hi, and welcome to the show. Why don't you go ahead and introduce your T1D kid to us, and let's hear why you came on and what we can help figure out together.
Yeah. So my name is Rachel. I have a 5-year-old son who was diagnosed when he was 2. Mm-hmm. And so we are coming up on our 3-year mm-hmm. in, I think, 4 or 5 days, right around the corner, mm-hmm. Which is very pivotal for us because this is the diagnosis or the diversity where he will officially have lived with diabetes longer mm-hmm. than he has without it. Mm-hmm. So there's no turning back, not that there was ever turning back from a diagnosis, mm-hmm. but I feel like that's a monumental one. But today I wanted to connect with you. So our son is 5. He is slated to go into kindergarten this mm-hmm. year. Mm-hmm. So I really wanted to kind of talk through, you know, what does T1D in a school setting look like? Mm-hmm. Like what suggestions as far as being able to educate teachers and principals and even his students around him, like what sort of education mm-hmm. can I proactively approach the situation with? Just mm-hmm. kind of like heading into that school setting is something he's been in daycare and pre-K. So I have a little bit of knowledge of how to set that up, but you know, that kind of plays into, is there a timeline on how to pass the T1D control as well? Because, mm-hmm. you know, he is 5 and of course I do all of that for him right now. He mm-hmm. is able to prick his finger, but also, you know, what does that look like? And any questions on that as well?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Those are big questions. Let me ask, what technology is he using?
So he wears a CGM. Mm-hmm. He wears Dexcom G6 mm-hmm. and wears an automated insulin pump, which is the Omnipod 5.
Okay. And then tell me, just give me like 3 sentences when you say he's in TK. What have you done there? Like what has worked for you there?
Right now we have his Dexcom base is a cell phone. Mm-hmm. So if he is going low, we call the cell phone and the teacher gives him juice. Mm-hmm. She will text me pictures of his meal and she will dose him accordingly. Mm-hmm. If I see him rising or going high, I will text her to dose him some insulin. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the management is still on me, mm-hmm. Instructing the teacher what to do through his base Dexcom phone.
Okay. And will he be in this? And are you, when you're texting, are you texting his phone?
Sometimes, yes. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I'll text his phone and the teacher's right there and she can hear it and pull it out. Mm-hmm. I've also been, because he's kind of grown up, you know, I've mm-hmm. also had a teacher that preferred for me to text her own personal phone. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I've asked to see each time he's moved up what that preference is.
Great. And is he going to be staying in the same school or is he going to a different school?
It is a brand new different school.
Mm-hmm. And is it public or private?
Public.
Okay. And do you know if there are any other T1D kids they've ever had in the school before?
I don't. I have not been able to connect with the school nurse yet. Mm-hmm. I have an open house this month. So mm-hmm. That could definitely be a list of questions that I ask.
Yeah. I think that that would be good for you to know, because then you can see if you can connect with those other parents. So you can sort of better understand what's worked and what, where the sticky spots are for the school system. Right. Yeah. You have two big questions. One is, what is it? What do I need to know basically to keep him safe at school? Which I want to name, Rachel, you already know because you're already doing it, but we can think through it a little bit more. And the other is, what's the, I love the way you phrased it, what's the timeline on changing responsibility? Like, when does my 5-year-old son start to take on more? What does that look like? So I'm not an expert in like a 504 plan. And I would recommend very strongly that you talked to your doctor or endocrinologist about helping you create a 504. They're used to doing this, so they know what that should look like. And I encourage parents to keep it as flexible as you can, in the sense of, if there's a question, it reverts back to you. So for example, you could have protocols like, if he's above this number, you dose like this. If he's below this number, here's the protocol. But what I want is for it to say something, some language in there that allows you to have final say. So if you change, if the management changes, which it likely will because he keeps growing, right? You can say to the nurse, right, like, I'd like you to do this differently. So that's one thing, is like, I want you to keep being in control, because sometimes nurses can be real sticklers for the language of a 504. And it can get, I've just seen a number of parents who've gotten into a bit of hot water where they have to like go back and get new language from their doctor. And that's just really hard on you. So I want you to build that into the 504 from the beginning. And I would, even ask the school nurse when you connect with her, like, what's the timeline for when we should have a meeting about the 504, right? And they maybe have a protocol. If they've had a T1D kid before, they likely have something, but it would be best if that meeting could be with the nurse, his teacher, whoever that might be. They might not know that yet, right? And any teaching assistants who are in the classroom. Because you maybe need help from several people. Like, I don't know what, like, there is a school nurse, that's great, but she's not in the classroom with him all the time. So how does that work? Is she going to be on share? Like, right, if she's the only, like, in my children's school, I have two kids with type one, at their school, the person who managed them was in the office, was not in the classroom with them, because the teacher really couldn't do it. It was too much for the teacher. Totally get it. I still trained the teacher, right? Because if there was a really big low, she needed to understand that. She needed to understand what was in the classroom, what was happening with one of her kids. And she also needed to know things like, if there's a birthday party, please let the office person know if you haven't let me know, right? And that's definitely something that falls through the cracks in a lot of schools. Okay, so I've just said a lot, so I'm going to pause. I have more to say, but I want to see how that lands, if you have questions or how that's feeling for you.
No, I think that you're spot on there. You know, I would say like my biggest worry is not having that direct communication. If I think about my experience now, I'm able to like instantaneously reach the person that is with Jackson in that moment. So that gives me a little peace of mind knowing that, you know, that double arrows down low is going to be like instantaneously treated. So my biggest fear is, we see it, you know, I call the nurse, she calls the teacher or the office person, and then the office person calls the teacher. So I think to your point, like having that meeting early on to be able to educate and see how they can work on their end to accommodate that communication.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So I think one thing that's important, Rachel, that you're naming is you have particular concerns, right? Particular fears. And I think you should name them, right? It's not neurotic to name them, to say, okay, so here's a situation that I can imagine coming up, or this situation has come up in TK. When there's double arrow down, how do we make sure the emergency is addressed quickly?
right?
Yeah.
Like I'm watching, I'm going to be tracking and helping support this, but I want to see like, what's the system? Because it might be for my kids, it was that office person literally got up and went. There was no like next call, next call, next call. And the nice thing, honestly, about having someone like a school nurse or an office person is that that could very well be your person for the entirety of his experience in that school, rather than it being a new teacher, a new teacher, a new teacher. Yes, every year you will have to train your new teacher because they need to know. Mm-hmm. But there's a good chance that this one person can create some continuity of care over mm-hmm. several years if you can build a positive relationship with that person.
That's a great point, because that's also another, not necessarily a worry, but more of a burden, knowing that it's the consistent education that you think about mm-hmm. with those different teachers. You know, yeah. every year you're having to teach someone different. Every summer camp, you're teaching someone different. So I like the idea of the office person, if that, you know, I like the idea mm-hmm. of it being that one person for the 5 years he's in elementary right. school, if that's the case. So that's yeah. a great, that's
yeah. a great. It point. Can be really helpful. So
yeah.
Another thought I have, what I've seen a lot with parents, is that there can be so much anxiety that when mm-hmm. the school fails, which I want to name, they will do. Mm-hmm. They will forget to tell you about a birthday party. They will let you know last minute about a field trip, right? Things that are really actually big for us, and really hard for us as mm-hmm. T1D parents, that there are better and worse ways to respond to that. So I'm going to give a little plug here. So on August 9th, which is a while from when we're recording this, I have a workshop called Beyond the 504, where I very specifically talk about how to relationship build with these folks who are your kids' school team, right? Because there's a lot of information out there about what should be on the 504 plan, mm-hmm. like how it should be structured. Your endocrinologist can help with that. But the places where things actually fall through the cracks are around relationship and around how there are repairs made when there are rifts, right? When mm-hmm. he does go to 300 and nobody has paid attention, when he's double arrowed down because he mm-hmm. was, you know, at PE this week, they were doing something super aggressive and like nobody warned you or something like this, right?
Right.
So I encourage you to think about coming to that. You can actually get on my website and register for it right now if you want. But also think about that you are building a relationship with your child's school care team, right? And that mm-hmm. you want to give them the benefit of the doubt. You want to believe that they are deeply concerned about your child and they want to do it right. And so when things are off, that you're leading from that place, right? And even at the very beginning, believing that they are wanting to do right by him is just a good starting place, right? And that they're willing to hear from you. That's another very important piece, that they're willing mm-hmm. to hear from you and believing that that's true as well, that they believe that you are a good caretaker of this, that you've been doing it for years, and that they should take you seriously about what your concerns are. So I think coming right. in with that stance is really going to be very helpful.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. I'll definitely look that up because I think you are spot on there. You know, I think that when I think about myself and my natural, you know, communication style, it's not a very direct, assertive style. So mm-hmm. for me, that has almost been a struggle to have those exact points mm-hmm. of what needs to get done while still being able to build that relationship. Mm-hmm. So I think that you're spot on there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're saying something so important. There's a cultural component, especially to how women are trained to speak, right? Mm-hmm. And one of the tasks that happens for all of us when our kids get diabetes is that we have to become advocates. And that may mm-hmm. not be our skill set, right? Mm-hmm. And we don't have a choice. We have to. So if you're worrying about this out in advance of the August 9th date, there's a book that I highly recommend called Difficult Conversations that mm-hmm. might be useful for you to get and skim through, right? Or read, depending. It's an easy read. And it talks about how to do that. Like, how do you have those difficult conversations, right? Which I think can be really hard for us as mothers who were not born necessarily to advocacy and culturally have been told to be polite, but we really have to talk to our school team about what we need for our kid to keep them safe.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. I want to address the other question that you had about transferring responsibility, but let me just pause and see if there's anything else here that you're feeling like you want to say or add.
I don't think anything additional. I think that you brought up some new things for me to address as far as the meetings and who else outside of the classroom would be able to, you know, attend and have a part. So those were two things that I didn't think about coming into this.
Good. Okay. So let's talk about this very big question about transferring responsibility. What's packed into that question is, I'm really anxious. How is he going to do this? He's five. I have 13 years till he basically leaves home. How's that happen? Right?
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. I am by nature a control freak, and I know that. And so when it comes to diabetes, you know, I'm the type of person where it's like, okay, I know what to do. I'll just do it and we can move on. But I also am very aware that I am here to set Jackson up for success. And that I will one day no longer do this. You can see I get emotional even talking about it. And I think that's like the motherly instinct of just taking care of your children.
Yeah.
Which is hard. So sorry.
No, there's nothing to apologize for. It is so hard. And it's hard no matter what to let go of our kids. But with diabetes, it's even harder because the consequences feel so much bigger. Right. And we're so scared. How could these small people do this humongous job? Like, it doesn't seem possible.
Exactly. But also being very aware that, you know, I want to try to set him up with as much knowledge as possible so that he's not an adult struggling with diabetes, that he is, you know, thriving with diabetes. So teetering that line.
Yeah. Good for you. Good for you. So I love you're centering something that's really important, right? Which is what you want for him, what you're hoping for him, which is his independence and his competence.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Okay. But let's think practically, boots on the ground. How does that look? How that looks is
exactly. Yeah.
It's super incremental, right? It's teeny, teeny, teeny steps. And sometimes it goes forward and backward. Right. Sometimes our kids are ready to take something on. And I would name that is especially true for younger kids. Like, they love a sense of mastery that they could push the numbers into the pump, for example, that they might be able to help you count the carbs. Like, these are tasks that at 8, 9, 10, kids are often really good at picking up. And then often when they hit their teen years or preteen years, even, they don't want to do those things anymore. Right. So I'll give you a story from my life. My daughter was my second T1D kid. She had an older brother who she admired and looked up to. So she was so excited to have diabetes, truly. And she was. And she could do everything incredibly early. Like, he couldn't change a pump till forever, but she could do it very young and wanted to. And then at about 13 or 14, I noticed that every time her pump expired, she'd suddenly have shifted to shots. She just didn't want to do it anymore. So I think what I recommend to parents is that you stay very closely alongside your child. And if he is expressing independence around something, let him do it. Let him try. Remember that he will possibly make mistakes and that that's okay. Right? Like, it's okay if he makes a few mistakes. That's part of the learning process. You made mistakes too. It's just no one was watching. So letting him make some mistakes, talking to him about the mistakes and thinking about how he can correct them, right? All normal. Stay alongside him. Give him lots of opportunities. Let him have a voice, like what he wants to do, follow his lead. And this is where I think it's actually particularly fabulous to have your kid at camp, right? A diabetes camp being around other kids with diabetes of all ages, because those are the environments where I notice that a lot of kids sort of take the next big developmental step around their own management, right? Because they see what other kids can do and they think, I want to do that too, right? So I strongly recommend, if you haven't already, putting your family, just him, whatever works for you, in an environment where there is a lot of it, so that he can see, like, oh, the other 5-year-old kid is actually, you know, doing X. I want to do that, right? That will help him develop the process.
Yeah. Right, right. Yeah. We've actually signed him up for like a weekend camp this summer. So
perfect. Good.
I'm excited for that. I think he will be too. But I really like your insight on staying alongside of them, because I have heard that from mothers of children who are older than mine, that there is a point where they just don't want to do it anymore. And I think being able in that moment to understand their feelings and say, okay, I got this for you, but we're going to pick it up again, you know, and kind of being a motivator at that time is kind of how I see myself handling that situation. So I think for me, I like the very incremental, you know, being able to show him small things to kind of integrate it into his day, will be key.
Yeah, so it is key, because it's too big a job for them to take on all at once.
Yeah.
It's frankly too big a job for us to have taken on all at once, but we did. We had to. We didn't have a choice. They have a choice, and they're going to have to do this for a long time after they leave home. And so my personal stance is, like, as much as we can carry for them is fine. They, as long as they know how. Like, if you have, I know kids who mom and dad changed their pumps, like did all the setup for that until they left for college. And those kids, it's not that they couldn't, it's they didn't want to. And we have to remember that difference is pretty profound. And sometimes kids burn out. So I think saying to them, you know, like, I'm seeing that it's really hard for you right now. What could I pick up, if anything, that would be useful? Right. Because we both know it's important that you manage your numbers, and it's really hard. So what can I do for you?
Right. Right.
Yeah. I mean, exactly. That's a decade from where you are right now, truly, because you're probably, what I see is you're likely going to go through a period where he's very enthusiastic about his care. There are kids who aren't, who are more angry, that, you know, there are deviations from this, but many kids in this young years are really enthusiastic about the care and proving their competence. Great. Let him, and then just keep alongside him and see what happens.
Well, I appreciate the insight. I often joke with my husband that I'm going to be, you know, he's going to be 30 years old and I'm still going to be following his numbers and calling him and bugging him. I know, hopefully that won't be the case, but that's how we find humor in diabetes.
You could go to my podcast and listen to episode 62, because that's with actually Stacy Sims, who has her own podcast, but her son was diagnosed at 2 and is now in college. And she's talking about the hard pieces about transitioning, and she's no longer on share, which I was when my son went to college. And at some point he said, enough, I don't want you on here anymore. Right. And so, but it might be helpful for you, not because you're up against that right now, but to see how it's possible, to see what happens. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. That name does ring a bell. I follow her. Social media. So, okay.
Yeah.
62, you said.
Yes, I did.
Awesome.
Thank you, Rachel, for coming on. Is there anything else that we should address that's lingering?
Yes, ma'am. No, I think that's it. I appreciate your time so much. This has been very insightful.
Good. Thank you.
Thanks again for listening today. If you want answers to your questions about parenting a kid with type 1, I'd like to invite you to join our live recording sessions so you can ask your questions in person. Not only will you get the support you need and deserve, but through the podcast, you'll be helping other T1D parents to know that they're not alone with the challenges they're facing. To join one of my live recording sessions, simply go to www.diabetessweettalk.com and click the banner at the top of the page to register. Again, go to www.diabetessweettalk.com and click the banner at the top of the page to register.